You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. Outdoor Edge introduces the all-new Razor Guide Pack. Coming in at 12 ounces and in a premium wax canvas roll pack for compact storage and travel, the Razor Guide Pack is 7 blades in total, including a 5-inch replaceable blade folding knife, a 3-inch replaceable blade caping knife, and the flip and zip saw for wood or bone. Whether you're hunting the back 40 or chasing game deep in the backcountry, the Razor Guide Pack has it all. For more information, visit OutdoorEdge.com.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast, where you're going to hear a valuable hunting-based conversation that's tailored for us Southern folk. If you love what we do and would like to support Southern Ground Hunting, you can visit patreon.com/southernground hunting, or you can click on the link in the show notes below. We'd love for you to join the Southern Ground Hunting community today. Again, that's patreon.com/southernground hunting. You can also support us by leaving us a rating and review on iTunes. It helps more than you know, and we greatly appreciate it. And now, let's get to the show.
You know, I don't want to overstate, you know, my experience. You know, I've been hunting for a long time, and the last 3-4 years, I've had the chance to travel a fair bit. So I've been all over the country hunting. I bet I've probably hunted a dozen states in the last 4 or 5 years. When I tell you, I have never seen scrapes as big or as deep into the ground as I saw there this year. Like really impressive, man. Like it was, it was really impressive. Like just jaw dropping. I mean, like as big around as large trash can lids, if not bigger, like venturing into the size of car hoods that were 3 and 4 inches dug into the ground.
Golly, that's, I mean, the most I'm of that sign had to have been
a week after, ago. It was
after we left, because we weren't seeing that.
It was, yep, we were 100% a week late. Like, we were a week, and it's hard because, you know, you know how Alabama's rut is. It's all over the board. And, you know, I was doing my best between talking to you and talking to Jordan and talking to as many people as I could sum up to try to make sure that I was dialing it in on time, because I felt coming out of last year, if we were just on time, we would have like some real serious opportunity to put multiple bucks on the ground. And we were just a week, exactly the same thing as last year. We were a week late. We had a little really hot action the first day or two. But in general, it was a busy week as far as deer sightings, a slow week as far as mature buck sightings, but tons and tons of sign. So.
Yeah. And I have found to like what you guys are doing as far as going, and y'all the last two times, which I guess before we get too far into this, I need to introduce you. This is Jake Leishen. Jake, you've been on one time before, right? Talking about travel hunting.
Yep, like one time before.
Whole setup and stuff. So if you're not familiar with Jake, go back and listen to that episode. He's an awesome dude. But he and a group of buddies have come to Alabama for the last two seasons, right?
Yep.
Two seasons. I wanted to pick his brain because he has a very interesting way of going about it, Jake. You really do. Like, you do your research really well, and you always seem to, like, after one of these trips or during these trips, you call me and you tell me about all the landowners that you made friends with. And it even happened in North Dakota when I ran into you up there. You were like, yeah, I got permission on this property and this one. Know the game warden. I'm going to his birthday party next week. And like, you just got like all these like really good relationships with everybody around. And it's just a really interesting process that you go through. And I kind of want to talk through that. But we're just kind of recapping what happened this last week here in Alabama. And
yep.
as we're talking about, man, you saw tons of big buck sign. We're on deer all the time. But what I was going to say is, the thing that I noticed is, especially in Alabama, like I've been to certain WMAs that you'll read on Facebook, whatever, on all the groups, oh, there's just tons of pressure there, or there's not that many deer there, or whatever. But if you hit it at the right time, you can go and you can really have a pretty dang good week, because Alabama is actually one of the highest deer densities in the country, strangely enough.
Yep. But
they're just kind of, it's a different situation to try to hunt them. If you hunt them outside of the rut, a lot of times, if you're not there in that magic time, you're going to feel like there's no deer there. And I don't know what it is about Alabama. It may just be the thick cover, you know, hilly terrain could be it, but it's really neat to me to hear your kind of your thoughts on how to go about hunting places like Alabama, and it probably can help everybody else too.
Yeah, so I think you know, getting started on that is just like, I'll preface it with saying that, you know, we were a little late. You know, I touched on it earlier, like we were a little late on the rut, you know, this year. And what I learned last year coming into Alabama was, you know, coming out of Alabama hunting last year, I felt really confident that at least on this specific WMA, pre-rut or rut would be my best time to catch a good buck in daylight. You know, we had a really good deer last year that was close, that I mean, we were real close to shooting, probably mid 140s, and I had him in bow range close, and another one of our crew ended up having him in bow range close, but he was always moving just before or after daylight, and there was just no way to get close enough to him to shoot him in daylight. I mean, he was unbeatable unless you were in the right spot to catch him or he made a mistake. And you know, I was kind of banking on being a little bit more on time this year. And you know, once again, Alabama's sporadic rut kind of took us by surprise, and we were about a week late again. But
it seemed to be statewide. You know, like,
yeah,
it seemed to be pretty much anywhere that I hunted, it was off just a little bit. And some places it was really, like, really dramatically off. Then other places, you know, it was, you know, maybe a week or two later than it normally is. And I talk to a lot of people, you know, and I know you do too. And it seems to be pretty consistently said that this season rut was a little bit weird, especially in the South, yep, and a lot of the country even.
Yeah. And I think it was weird. I don't know whether this area of the state of Alabama is a little less inclined to deal with what you and some of the other guys were telling me, but I feel the rut was exactly that, because we hunted the exact same week this week as we did, or this year as we did last year, and it was exactly the same thing. I mean to a T. And based on the fact that you had hunted 2 weeks before that, you know, I really feel like that midweek between when you were there and when I was there was just probably a 5-day window of just it being on fire, which is what it seemed like last year when we were there. So now I'm pretty excited going into year three about coming back and knowing when to be there, like that mix of pre-rut timeframe, you know, knowing that I can hit it on the head. It's just if work lines up, you know, because it's, one of the things that's so interesting to me is I've been lucky enough to hunt a lot of places, and I'm typically pretty against the idea of bucks being nocturnal, but Alabama seems to have this weird thing where there's a lot of deer that tend to move. Big bucks specifically, where they really are very, very minimal in the amount of distance they move during the day, and they will stay. They will stay in some really gnarly stuff there where there's just no way to hunt them until it gets extremely close to dark. I mean, or fully dark. And we got in on a really good one this year again, and that was the same story. He was in a very specific thicket. I mean, dude, he was living in like less than a half acre spot, and he just would not move. Like, unless you bumped him out of there, he was not leaving in daylight.
Was this another situation where y'all saw him or bumped him on multiple occasions? Is that kind of how you figured it out and nailed it down?
No, we actually figured it out because what happened was, and I think maybe the best way to do this is to like talk about like kind of how the week progressed, because that's going to help give some context. And it'll kind of probably keep me in line. So to give everybody some perspective, we got there on Saturday evening. So we made the drive from North Carolina up on Saturday evening, and Sunday was, you know, I always like to take the first day or even 2 days, depending on what I find. And all we do is scout. So all of Sunday, we just covered ground. We just walked every road we could walk. We looked for every bit of sign. Thankfully, it had rained pretty good Saturday night. So when we were walking roads, we were really looking for fresh cut tracks, or we were looking for any scrapes that had been made the morning of our scouting day. So we walked a ton. I mean, we walked hundreds of acres, as much as we could possibly do. We blew as much stuff out, found tons of sign, actually like found a bunch of sheds, oddly enough. Like good sheds too. Anyways, good sign. And got really confident going into Monday. So Monday comes around and we had pretty much isolated down where all of the big buck sign was to two specific regions on this property. So they were split apart by a big drainage ditch and two separate main thickets. So we kind of figured they were two different bucks that were working two separate doe groups, because this place has no shortage of does. I mean, an absolute ton of does. So one of the guys in our group took one spot, and I took the other spot. And we just, my goal then was in the place that I'm hunting, and I can't talk, I could give you a synopsis of what Chris dealt with where he was hunting that deer, but I'm obviously not him, so I don't want to dive into that. So what I was running into was, by narrowing down initially where I felt this buck was based on the sign that he had left the week prior, he was still hitting some of the more major hub scrapes that he was using to travel past. So if you think about just a square, like just a four-sided square, and then imagine in the dead middle that there's a buck bedding right in the middle of it. Well, if he's leaving scrapes only in the southeast corner of that square, then it's a matter of finding out that's part of his predominant range that he's active in at some point. And we were using that activity to understand his travel pattern as far as where he was crossing to come back to bed. So what I like to do is, especially in places where bucks will run scrapes on roadways, is I like to walk those roadways after each sit during when I'm hunting, and I'll monitor all those scrapes, and I'll look at whether they were hit that morning or not when that buck came back to bed. So now, fast forwarding through the week, by the time we started to get into the end of the day on Tuesday, going into Wednesday morning, the buck had hit specific scrapes going and coming to bed 3 days in a row. So we knew exactly where he was going based on which community scrapes he was hitting. And we could look at the size of the track that he was leaving, which was a four-finger walking track coming to and from that bed. So now it's a matter of, it wasn't whether he was there, because there's only so many places he can bed within that block. It's just, how do we get to him without alerting the other deer? And Parker, I know you have hunted the other areas around this WMA, but I don't know if you've been on this specific one. It's extremely thick, but thick in a really odd way. So it's very like, it almost feels like hunting North Florida, in the sense of it's very, very oak heavy, but very thick, very short oaky, very dry in this particular spot. And the thick stuff is surrounded by other thick stuff that you can see really well through. Mm-hmm. So what this buck was doing was he was bedding in the thickest part of that. And then there were all these doe bedding areas that surrounded him in cover that you could see. When you're standing up, it's hard to see through, but when you crouch, you can see for 300 yards.
Yeah.
So your approach was really difficult, because you inevitably were bumping deer no matter what. It was very hard. So, it took a while to figure out how to actually get in on him without bumping him. Unfortunately, we did not actually see him on the hoof like I wanted. We were just chasing his sign, and he was in there. He was in there every day. We would just, you know, the option was either go in and bump him real hard and kick him up out of there, which I was afraid to do, because it's Alabama and not the Midwest. I knew he would relocate altogether. And I didn't want to have to relearn an entirely new spot. So I was figuring that we would kind of pinprick around him until we found out where his main exit trail was. And by the time we figured that out, it was closing in on the end of the week. It was, you know, towards Friday, you know, which is why I'm a big fan of kind of leaning on more. I tend to find my success out of state is on day 6 or day 7. On killing one, not usually in a 4 or 5 day window, especially in places like Alabama, only because it's just, I feel like when you're hunting a really mature deer, sometimes it can take that long just to understand how he's leveraging the terrain and how to like actually make it work.
Yeah. And you know, and that, I think that that's specifically southern deer. I mean, obviously some people get lucky here and there, whatever. Maybe they put themselves in the right position and luckily a big buck came through that same day. But I've had multiple times where I've gone to another state and set up on big buck sign and seen the buck that made the sign. In Alabama, it's just not very often that you can go and set up on that sign the first time you set up there, that you get a shot at that deer. A lot of it's just learning, consistently learning. Now there are times where you're in the right place. That's why I really like, not so much banking on sign out here as I am the terrain and vegetation features. That are just going to have naturally move deer through. So even if there's not a lot of sign, that doesn't mean, I don't need them to stop in the area and do a whole lot. I just need them to walk through. Did you find that to be the case for you guys this week as well? Like maybe, I don't know, this is the first time I'm hearing about it, so I don't know if y'all had any actual like in-person encounters with big bucks, but I'd just be curious to know like kind of, I don't even know what the question would be. Like, I want to know if you guys were setting up on that big sign or if y'all were finding those features that funneled deer movement.
Yeah, so it's a combination of things, right? So, like, so I agree with you in looking at terrain features. So this place, as you know, is pretty flat. And so there wasn't a lot of, like, actual, like hard terrain features that you would expect maybe in more central or northern Alabama. You're hunting real subtle things. So like a fire break would be a change in elevation for this place. So that being said, the reason I was looking for sign the way I was just to narrow down his path of travel. And then when we knew where he was going and coming from, because it was, like, for example, I wasn't expecting to kill him over a scrape necessarily as much as I was. I just wanted to know, it's the tail end of the rut, and I'm expecting that he's going to check on his way back to bed and leaving bed, any big travel corridor scrapes that he can in the early morning hours or late at night. And if he's doing that, then I might be able to correlate where his bed is in relation to that, because he's not going to hit every scrape in the area like he would in the peak rut, but he's probably still going to work 2, maybe 3 within this circle of his, within this circle of pattern that he's probably doing.
Yeah.
And that was what proved to be accurate. Now, that also, you know, to what you were saying, lined up with specific vegetation features. And what we found was his route of travel, with the exception of a couple different open bottoms that he had to cross, which presumably were occurring in the dark. Other than those two open bottoms, one on the way out from bedding, and then one after he exited bedding, and then one on the way back to bedding that he was crossing in the early morning hours, he was staying in thick cover the entire time. Like, his route to bedding and out of bedding, he was 100% not visible to the eye, even if you were within 25 yards of him. You had to be on his trail if you had wanted to see him. So we were hunting a lot of places where our visibility was fairly minimal. There really wasn't a lot to see. We were hunting a very specific trail where we had cut his tracks, or we thought he was going on an exit trail, or where we had found a fresh rub from the night before, and we were kind of trying to determine where his path to and from bedding was. He also wasn't exiting bedding the same way he was entering. Which was what we ended up kind of figuring out, wind dependent. So every buck is different, obviously, but this deer specifically, based on his path of travel, you know, once again, preface this is like, we were always a step behind him. So I'm basing this off of where his feet were, which is the one thing that doesn't lie, that like we were following his tracks and his scrapes all week. So, but what he did was he was always leaving nose to the wind, essentially. He was leaving bedding nose into the wind as he exited bedding to ensure that he was not going to get busted. So we had to hunt very close to like just off wind to be able to get him. Like, we were always cutting our wind right off of where we thought he was bedded. He was always moved. I mean, I don't want to be redundant, but I feel like it was so thick and so gnarly in there, you know, and on a 4-day window, to hunt him, it was probably a little bit more than was accomplishable in 4 days, unless, especially in post rut, which is what we were doing. I think had we had, you know, 6-7 days, I think the odds of killing him would have gone up a lot more, because you just learn the area a lot better. But I feel like we learned it enough to know that if there's a big deer in there next year, he's probably going to do very similar, because there's only a certain way that he can stay safe and be that old and live there if there's any pressure at all.
Hey guys, as most of you know, censorship for hunters and anglers is completely out of control. So we've partnered with the social media platform Go Wild to combat the mainstream social media censorship. Go Wild was built by outdoorsmen and women just like you. Go Wild is a free social community. Not only are your photos not censored, they're actually encouraged on Go Wild. They give you points for things like sharing your trophies, gear reviews, and inviting other friends. And as you earn points, you unlock awesome rewards too, like gift cards, free stuff like knives, huge discounts on brands like Garmin and Vortex, and so much more. And if you create a free account, you can unlock $10 just for trying it out. Visit GoWild.com to get started. 6-Day Grind Coffee Co. is made for people like you, the ones out there grinding to reach your goals every single day. Whether it's 3 a.m. wake-up calls to get into the woods, or just getting through your workday, a good cup of high-quality coffee to start your day is imperative. When you buy from 6-Day Grind, you not only get a great bag of premium roasted coffee, you also have the opportunity to support conservation through their Coffee for Your Cause program, where 10% of your purchase goes to the conservation organization of your choice. Check out 6daygrindcoffeeco.com today. That's the word 6 followed by daygrindcoffeeco.com. I've got a question for you. And it's kind of just like a, I want you to answer this truthfully. Don't answer it with what you think is going to be the right answer, but really truthfully, do you feel like if you had not focused on this one deer and trying to figure out those, you know, just kind of microscopic details about what he's doing, and you just hunted based on what you know about deer, what you know about how deer move through that area, through this, in this specific WMA, you feel like your odds would have went up if you wouldn't have focused so much on him as far as killing a deer that you would have been happy with? Do you feel like that was more achievable than trying to pinpoint a specific buck?
I think it's, no, not necessarily. And I, and the reason for that was after the first day, it was after our scout day, or I would say after the scout day on Sunday and then Monday, it was pretty clear that we weren't in the middle of the rut. Like, so for me, had we had between those 2 days, had it been very identifiable that it was just jam packed rut was heating up and firing off, I think I would have sat way more traditional funnels, way more areas where I was expecting to just be on any deer, versus my strategy in post-rut is very similar to pre-rut in that I find more success hunting a specific deer where it's like, okay, I'm going to find this deer. And if once I find him, if it's within the first day or two, which it was again, I feel really confident about getting a crack at him as long as he moves during daylight or I don't make a mistake. You know, which I did make a mistake this trip, and we can talk about that. I made a mistake Wednesday afternoon, and that was on me.
And that would have been on hunt day number, was that hunt day number two?
Day number three. And we made a push to go in and hunt him in a spot where we knew he was exiting. So we had cut some of his tracks coming in and out of bedding on an exit trail that was leaving a spot where we knew where he was entering by this point, and we should have. This is a heartbreaking part. So we should have shot him Tuesday morning. I think it was Wednesday morning, actually. Sorry. We should have shot him Wednesday morning. So we, on our scout day, one of the things that we found is on this one specific part of the property, it was pretty easy to see. It was like his path back to bed. He was going out and feeding on these oaks on the north side of the property, and there were a bunch of does that were bedded up there. So he could go up, feed, check these does, come back, and he had thrashed a bunch of scrapes coming back into bedding, and there were tracks and signs that he was coming back through. It was a very specific thick funnel that crossed a roadway, and this roadway he had laid down just absolutely giant scrapes on. I mean, monster scrapes. And we were waiting for the right time to sit that, as far as the wind and just being able to get in there, because we were, it was a long haul to get there. And on Wednesday morning, Tuesday night, sorry, it rained all night long. It rained all night until probably, I mean, it was still raining when we were going in. That's for perspective. As we got there, we were a little late. We were having to use a boat to get into this place. So as we got there, like, we just had some problems with our vehicles, and we ended up being late to the spot, and we're now hanging right after gray light. He had come in and hammered those scrapes in shooting light going back to bed. I mean, just demolished those scrapes right where we were going to hang. So it was raining enough to where I know he did not hit those scrapes before visible light. He was just late to bed. Had we been on time, we probably would have shot him.
And you're not using any cameras either, right? Like you don't have trail cameras up telling you any information. This is just woodsmanship, breeding stuff.
Yeah, we hung a trail camera for kind of just giggles on a food plot to see how many deer were coming into a food plot while we were there. But this was completely separate from that. We weren't hunting a deer. We weren't like getting pictures or seeing the deer. He could have been, an 8-point, he could have been a 150-inch deer. I don't know specifically. I know what his rubs look like, and I know the size of his track, which was 4 fingers wide. So, and I know the size of the scrapes, which I think I told you earlier, Parker, his scrapes ranged anywhere from the size of like a trash can lid to the size of a car hood. And they were, 2 to 4 inches deep, all of them. Had we shot him, we'd been joking about calling him the cereal bowl buck because he was carving the scrapes out deep enough to where it was like a cereal bowl. That's honest to God what was going on.
I think it's really cool. Trying to think of the right way to even talk about it. There's been chatter lately talking about cell cameras and all that kind of stuff. And I have my own opinions on things. And I know you do too. But one of the things that I really like about not using cell cameras is I like what we're talking about here in that you really don't have any idea what this deer looks like. You have some context because you've hunted deer your whole life and you know what a big buck track. It's probably a big buck. There's not a lot of small bucks with giant tracks running around. And so you're just kind of using all the knowledge, woodsmanship that you've learned to this point in life, and you're trusting it that it's telling you that's a big deer. And I think that's really cool because had you shot him, or maybe if you shoot him next year or whatever, it's like this deer that you have hunted, that you've actively hunted, that you didn't even know what they looked like. You know what I mean?
That's I think that's what's exciting too, though, is it's like that, in a day and age of like everybody knowing what they're hunting and knowing what's on a piece of property, it's kind of fun, like having that surprise factor,
Would you consider it like a, it's kind of like internet dating. Right? Because you don't know exactly what they look like till you land that first date.
that's somewhat accurate. I think it's like going on a date with somebody.
A blind date.
Versus a blind date. There you go.
And sometimes those blind dates can, man. You go in with low expectations, and sometimes they'll prove you wrong.
This is actually the start to Parker's new podcast, Southern Ground Dating Advice.
Dude, I haven't been into dating. I haven't been on dating scene in so long. I'm so happy about it, too. My gosh.
Dating with Parker, a Southern Ground experience. dating on Southern Ground.
Golly. I derailed us a little bit there, but I do think that is a cool aspect to this style of hunting that you're doing. Is just you don't know, but you're committing to everything that you've learned, trusting that instinct.
Yeah, and I think there's things that guys can lean on, like, inevitably, and a lot of if I play devil's advocate here, a lot of guys would be like, well, you don't know if a buck is big enough, by a track or by a rub and you're right. Little buck can hit a big scrape, a little buck can have a big track, a little buck, I had trail cam pictures this year in North Carolina of like a year and a half old 8-point that was rubbing the biggest signpost rub I've ever physically seen. So it's not that they can't attribute to that. But the reality is like I'm playing a game of odds when I'm reading sign. And the odds are most big bucks are probably going to have a big track. Not that they can't have a small track, but they're probably going to have a big track. And most big bucks are probably going to make a bigger rub, at least a rub that's higher on the tree. So I'm looking for height on a tree and size of rub. And I'm assuming, not that a small buck couldn't have made that, but that the odds are a bigger buck probably tackled that. Same thing with the scrape. You know, if you're looking at a scrape, usually in my experience, it's not that a small buck won't make a big scrape or won't hit a small scrape, but how deeply the scrape is carved out to me is usually an indicator of the fact that it's like it takes some gumption in that buck to be able to dig that dirt out. Like he's got some weight to his scrapes, and he's probably hit it time and time again. Either that or depending on location, it could be like a big hub scrape, you know? So I felt confident going into hunting him that we were in the right place, and I was keeping the rest of my crew aware of what I was doing and getting, you know, kind of like support in that I was making the right decision, which I think is not something to shy past. Is like, you know, I'm lucky enough to get to hunt a lot, but I still question myself. I think everybody does. And I like to share information with people that I'm close to. Now, obviously not with everybody, but there are times where I'll just call up a buddy and I'll just be like, hey man, let me paint the picture for you for what I'm seeing, you know, and I'll have them pull up on X and I'll sit there and talk to him about what I'm dealing with. And I'll see if like he thinks that what my decision is or what she thinks is the right call, you know, and it's that can be really helpful. And usually I'm not running into a lot of like, hey, you're making the wrong decision. It's more of like just reiterating that you're making the right call, and it just gives you a confidence boost going into the woods. And I feel good about, I don't think we could have hunted him any better than we did this week. You know, we missed our one real opportunity to kill him, which was that morning. I feel confident he was. Everything in the fiber of my being, based on the rain and how, like when he was there and the freshness of that scrape and how everything was laid down, he was there right at daybreak and we just missed him. That's on me. You know, we should have been there earlier, and he probably would have taken a boat ride home, but you know it didn't work out. You know, and then the following day. The following afternoon, I made a mistake because we knew he was in there bedded down. And once again, as if we didn't learn in the morning, we ran out to go grab lunch instead of bringing it with us into the field. And then we were a little late getting back. And as we were walking in, we had a doe bust us, you know, because we were getting set up later than we should have been. And when she busted us, we tried to hop up in a tree quicker than we needed to on his exit trail out of bedding. And the tree that we were trying to hang a set in was just the gnarliest, loudest tree I have ever. It was just like whatever higher power was up there was not looking favorably on me trying to get my set hung quietly on this day. So it was everything that could go wrong went wrong, like, you know, and it, you know, lessons learned in being, you know, sometimes it's important. Like one of the things that I always tell people, and I need to remind myself on occasion, is even if you're running late to your stand, like it's better that you just pause and take a deep breath. And it's like, I would rather be hung quietly in the right spot at 4 p.m. than loudly in the wrong spot at 3:30. So just take your time.
For sure.
Like, be smart, you know, and everybody's inclined to make mistakes. You know, I definitely made a mistake, and I'm fairly confident when we made those mistakes, he was bedded within 75 yards of us and he probably got up and got out of there. Because where we were, there really wasn't much other people pressure. So I don't think he was getting hunted where we were hunting him very regularly, if at all, because it was such a brutal process to get in there.
Do you want to know more about saddle hunting? Well, you can go to tetherednation.com for all your saddle hunting needs. Tethered is for saddle hunters, by saddle hunters, and they're redefining ultralight hunting. If you know me, you know that I love to have a system for all of my hunting equipment, where everything works together, and we preach about it a lot on this podcast. When you buy from Tethered, you can rest easy knowing that all your gear is designed to work together as a system. Saddles, platforms, ropes, climbing sticks, and a ton of other great gear just for saddle hunting can be found by visiting tetherednation.com today. That's tetherednation.com. Check them out. Everything you're talking about to me, you could almost do a whole podcast episode about the importance of your whatever elevated hunting platform you use, tree stand, climber, saddle, whatever. The importance of being able to set that up quietly. Like,
oh my gosh.
Dude, I don't know. Well, you're from the South. You've probably been on public somewhere and heard somebody climbing a tree with their climber. I mean,
Noise is the most underrated thing. Like, everybody wants to be so critical of their scent, and that's a whole different ball game. We won't go down that rabbit hole. But I believe firmly in my being, the number one thing that gets people ruined on killing deer is noise. Like, I really do. Like, it, without a shadow of a doubt, whether it's the noise in your set, whether it's rushing through the woods, being too loud when you're walking, whether it's popping sticks and not taking your time, like, you're always better. If you play the wind, you can, for the most part, always win in the scent game if you're playing the wind. But if you're loud, it doesn't matter whether you smell good or smell bad. Like, he can hear you, especially inside of 100 yards, which is what you kind of have to be that close on some of these big deer. You know, the closest we got to him was on Friday night. We knew it was the last night of our trip, and we pushed in to hang. We hung within 60 yards of where we thought he was bedded. And I'm fairly confident he got up out of his bed and stood in his bed within 60 yards of us right at dark, because we heard a deer stand up right where we thought he was bedded. And it took us 2 hours to get in there quietly, like two hours from the time we left the roadway. It was probably a 150-yard walk, and we took 2 hours to do it. And another probably 30 to 45 minutes just to hang the set. And the reason was because he's so – when they're in there like that, man, even though I knew he couldn't see us where he was bedded, assuming he was there, like, he's so dialed in, and it was so quiet and still – any sort of odd noise at this time of year, especially in post rut, after he's had, I think what this WMA's had 4 or 6 rifle weekends by this point, and people walking around and marching around, and he's definitely encountered people, whether it's been there or on the adjacent private. Like, he's not gonna get up if he feels uncomfortable for any reason at all. Like, for you know, sure. He's gonna stay locked in. So my job becomes, I know without a shadow of a doubt, he's not moving until 30 minutes before dark. So if it takes me until 45 minutes before dark to actually get set up, if I'm just ninja quiet, then that's what I'm going to do. And the closest we got to him, you know, presumably, which, like I said, we heard a big deer stand up, we heard him stand up, and we heard him take several steps because of he broke some giant stick. And we heard what we thought was, like, this is a very specific sound when a buck is moving through thick cover, and you can hear the brush hit his antlers.
Mm-hmm.
We heard that as he was leaving bedding. So we think it was him, you know, but I don't want to act like we knew for sure. But there was a good deer that was in there, and we were able to get in within 60 yards of him and hang a set and do it quietly. you know, but it just didn't work out in our favor. You know, he literally exited betting the opposite side of the betting area that we thought he was going to exit on, and, you know, just how the cards were dealt.
Well, let me start this question by saying this for people wondering. The thing I find interesting about Jake's experience here in Alabama is, I mean, both times, Jake, you've come to me after the trip, told me about it, like finding really good intel, really good getting on deer and seeing a lot of deer too, which is another big factor. You know, you're able to come in as a non-resident and see a lot of deer. While the thumbnail image for this episode isn't going to be you behind a big giant Alabama deer, you got closer, I believe, than most people coming as non-residents to hunt public land. And so I think that that's pretty cool. And that's why, I wanted to have you on the show and do a podcast about this, because I feel like I even learned things about hunting Alabama when I talked to you. You have an interesting perspective on things. So that being said, if you had to give one piece of advice to somebody looking to come to Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, any of these kind of deep South states that tend to hunt pretty similar, what would you tell them?
I think the most important thing that you can do is to not underestimate the value of not only scouting at the beginning of your trip, but also scouting during your trip. Like, it's so understated. Guys think that they can just go into a property and set up and just work your way through the property during the week, or just sit and assume that you're going to see what you need to see. But you're hoping. When you hunt like that, you're just hoping for the best. You're not hunting based on what you know. And if you're going to be successful out of state, and this is not, I don't want to take credit for this. I've learned this from a lot of other guys that are much more successful hunters than me, and I've just been lucky enough to apply it to states that I hunt. And it works just as good in the South. Because when you go somewhere, you have to scout. Like, take a day or two, and I know it's hard, because at times, like, you have such limited time to hunt, but you're better off scouting a day or 2 days, even if you only have three to hunt, and then hunting where you know you need to be, than spending 3 days where you don't need to be. And man, it just puts you in the game, you know, and the same thing applies for during your hunt. Like, one of my favorite things to do is to scout during lunchtime. Like, especially if you're on a property where you can scout and not bust deer, which is a lot of Alabama land that's roaded up. Like, man, just when you finish, you get out of the stand, if there's roadways that deer they're crossing or they have to cross, whether they're pine thicket roadways or even through oaks or whatever, just go walk the roads. Look for crossing tracks, look for scrapes on roadways, look for whatever it is that you need to find to identify if a deer's in there, especially in the morning. Like, really, especially in the morning, because if you find him coming back into an area in the morning, you can look at a map and pretty much figure out where he's at. So that would be my biggest piece of advice, is scout before your trip on maps, scout when you get there so that you understand the property and how to access it, and then scout during the week between your hunts to understand what those deer are doing and how they're evolving, not only to your pressure, but also to just what that time of the year is doing, because everything is going to continuously change and you need to evolve with it.
Absolutely. I mean, you're talking about from the week that I was there. So in a 3 week period, you almost went into hunting like a completely different hunting tactic. Whereas I think most people would have thought, you know, I'm close enough to the rut, I'm going to hunt it like it's the rut. You know what I mean? I know I get in the habit of doing that. If I go to somewhere new, I get in the habit of like, oh, you know, if it's 2 weeks after the rut, 3 weeks after the rut, I'm just going to set up like it's still rut. And so I think, you know, here in this little conversation, for anybody who's listening, It's valuable information. I know for me, I'm going to put it to use. I've got one more deer hunt coming up, and it's a bonus buck hunt that's it's taking place this weekend, and I'm going to go and do that and hunt. I can, for one day, I can kill a buck, and even though I'm tagged out already. So I'm going to put this stuff to use, man. I really am.
Lucky.
It's good stuff.
Lucky you, dude. I'm jealous. Can't wait. Can't wait to hear about the slammer that you killed.
I don't know, man. I've got a lot of days under my belt this season. I don't know that one more day is going to do a whole lot of difference, but I'm going to try. I'm going to give it my best shot.
Heck yeah, man. I'm excited. I'm right now, I'm just looking forward to fall 2023 and getting back. And I think now, like 2 years of intel, hopefully I can strike at a better time next year and, or apply the same principles, you know, to a different part of Alabama. Who knows? You know, but I've told you and I'll tell everybody else, like, there's Alabama is an awesome place to hunt. There is no shortage of deer. It doesn't mean that the big deer are easy to kill. That's an important thing to remember, but they're available. Like, they're there. You just have to work for them.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast. And as always, a big shout out to all of our partners. That's Go Wild, Tethered, Spartan Forge, and 6 Day Grind Coffee Company. You can keep up with Southern Ground Hunting by following us on Facebook or Instagram or subscribing to the YouTube channel. And you can be sure to check us out at southerngroundhunting.com to pick up some of our merch, read some blog articles, and all that good stuff. I truly hope you enjoyed this week's episode, and we'll see you here again next week. Remember that God gave you dominion over the birds of the air, the fish of the sea, and the beasts of the earth. So go out and exercise that dominion. We will talk to you next week.